At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Today, we're discussing Dave Dickinson's challenges as the CFL's only remaining head coach and general manager.
The Red Blacks looking to make a run for first place in the East Division.
The CFL's poor television ratings on CTV.
Corey Mace's displeasure, or should I say disappointment, with his team's practice on Tuesday.
And a GoFundMe campaign that's been set up to pay Miles Brown's latest fine on his behalf. But first, the BC Lions played both quarterbacks this past week, with Nathan Rourke and Vernon Adams Jr. having one thing in common. They stunk! Rourke had accuracy problems for much of the first half, while Adams showed signs of rest in the second half as the pair combined for only 185 passing yards and one pick. Did Rick Campbell make a mistake when he changed quarterbacks at halftime? And who should be the starter when this team returns from bye?
Not only did Rick Campbell make a mistake when he changed quarterbacks, he made one of the worst coaching mistakes I've seen since covering the CFL. To me, there was absolutely no logical reason to change his quarterbacks and pull Nathan Rourke at that point in the game. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not opposed to pulling Nathan Rourke if he plays badly and inserting Vernon Adams Jr. VA has earned that opportunity. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. If you're in a situation where you think you need to make that change, by all means, do it. But it should have happened after the first quarter, not at halftime. Quarter one, Rourke's out there. He looks shaky. He's one of five. He got 5 yards passing, -1 yard of net offense in that first quarter. But in the second quarter, guys, Nathan Rourke is 5 of 7. One of those incompletions, by the way, was a deep shot to Alexander Hollins that was dropped when he blew out his shoulder. So it should have been 6 of 7.
Frying pan hands shows up again.
Well, I mean, he dislocated his shoulder on the play,
yeah,
so let's maybe cut him a break on this particular one. But Sugarman 6 of 7, 105 yards, and his final play of the day was a 9-yard touchdown run where he kept his eyes downfield, escaped the pocket, and made something happen with his feet. Rick Campbell said after the game that he wanted a spark from his quarterbacks. That was the spark, guys. It was right there. Nathan Rourke just scored a touchdown and showed that there was life in that offense. Now, the defense turned around and gave up a big touchdown of their own. That's not ideal, but you have to ride the wave. You have to see if Rourke can continue getting it done in the second half. Instead, Campbell blindsided both his quarterbacks. VA and Rourke were not expecting this at halftime, and VA goes in, and he looks rusty, right? He fumbles on the very first play from scrimmage. He makes some completions. He throws an uncharacteristic interception. And he's got happy feet in front of an offensive line that was just not good enough in that football game. So I think Campbell made a huge mistake here, and it may have cost BC this football game.
I just hope that the BC Lions can realize the message they sent to Vernon Adams Jr. and the rest of the team and franchise when they signed Nathan Rourke back from the NFL into the subsequent years of this contract. The message was clear. Nathan Rourke is the quarterback of now and the future. And I don't get why Rick Campbell keeps talking about, well, we might play this guy or we might play that guy. Pick one, go with Nathan Rourke for a myriad of reasons and stick with it. I think it's so simple. They're bringing this quarterback controversy onto themselves. I know they didn't want it, but it's happened now. Nathan Rourke is your starter. Vernon Adams Jr. is the backup. VA will play if Rourke gets hurt. Everything else is Nathan Rourke. It's simple to me, guys, and I think they could avoid a lot of distraction, and also they could unify the locker room if they stick with Rourke. Now what they've caused is Rourke potentially looking over his shoulder at Rick Campbell to say, hey, was that play good enough? Am I going to get pulled? Is VA going to come in now? That can start to wear away at the confidence of whichever quarterback is in there, and they've brought this on themselves.
I actually fully disagree. I think that Vernon Adams Jr. should be the starter of this team when they come back from bye. And that's because Vernon Adams Jr. had an entire training camp and at the midway point of the season was going to be the MOP of this league. And obviously his injury has created the weirdness that we discussed on last week's show regarding the year-end award. I do not envy the people who have to make that decision. Oh, wait a minute. I'm one of them. Crap. But... well, that's a conversation for another day. Getting back to the BC Lions, Vernon Adams Jr. found a way to navigate his way behind this offensive line, which was unbelievably bad in this game against the Toronto Argonauts. There's something about the boatman that when BC's offensive line looks across, and I suppose we should give credit to the co-defensive coordinators in Toronto, William Fields and Kevin Iben, who... apparently they just know how to get this done. Like Jared Brinkman put up 3 sacks from his defensive tackle spot in week 1, ate David Neville's lunch that day, and now it's Ralph Hawley in that same spot who put up 3 sacks. If you're going into a contract year and you're a Toronto Argonaut DT, you got to play the BC Lions. That'll earn you a lot of money for the next year, apparently. But I think that VA deserves the right to finish what he started. Nathan Rourke is the future. That is obvious. But I think Vernon Adams Jr. is the right now. And I agree with you, Dunk. I don't think that Rick Campbell should keep talking about, you know, because he's kind of trying to have his cake and eat it too. Well, we're week to week. Well, we're week to week. Well, we're going to start this guy. Where are we going to put in this guy? I think the message needs to be VA is our starter. Nathan Rourke is our future. Dunk, he said his piece. I've said my piece. JC, you're the tie-breaking vote. Who's the starter?
Well, I'll sit on the fence here because I would lean towards...
No, like, you can't sit on the fence, bro.
I would play Rourke because I think he's a better quarterback, and I think he's been better over the last number of games than VA has been in his last few performances. Look, before VA got hurt, his last 2 games were terrible, right? Doesn't erase what he did at the start of the season, but his last 2 performances were terrible. He was not particularly good in this game when he came in off the bench. And the 2 games before it from Rourke, I thought, were brilliant. So I would go with Rourke going forward. But if Rick Campbell were to make the other decision, frankly, I wouldn't care. I think both of these guys are talented enough to deserve that opportunity. My issue is with the process. And I asked Rick Campbell about this post game. I said, okay, you're going to make this decision. Is it a competition in practice? What is the metric being used to determine who your starter is going forward? And he was adamant. It's not a competition. I'm the only one who will make the decision. I don't know how I'm going to make the decision yet, but there will be a decision made. And that just doesn't work because the BC Lions have largely avoided a divided locker room because both Nathan Rourke and Vernon Adams Jr. have been professionals since being thrust in this uncomfortable situation. But now all of a sudden, if your head coach is making decisions about the quarterback that are unclear and the players around them don't see the reasoning behind it either. Oh, he was better in practice this week. This way he gets the start. Oh, coach said he's going based off of last game and so was better in the last game. Therefore, he's getting the start. Once you get into a realm where it's debating and opinion based and there's nothing concrete to fall back on for that decision, division is going to seep into the locker room. There are going to be guys who said, well, if you benched Rourke, why are you starting him the next week? Or vice versa. If you got rid of VA or if you brought in Rourke to replace VA, well, why aren't you playing Rourke, right? there is going to be those conversations in the locker room. They're unavoidable unless Rick Campbell can make a clear and decisive statement as to why he is choosing his starter. To me, that is the important thing going forward.
The direction is lacking, and I think that's part of what's hurting this football team right now. It's a football team that a lot of people were picking at the start of the season to win a home Grey Cup in BC, and it's clear to me, and Hodge is well within his right to disagree and go with Vernon Adams Jr., but pick one for the betterment of those two individuals and the betterment of your team. Pick a quarterback, ride him out, and as JC pointed out, if you're going to change to the other one, have some logic behind that, because your locker room can't understand you picking without logic. That doesn't make any sense. If you look at other professionals in the world, be it football or anything else, there's logic to a lot of decisions that are made. If Amar Doman said, well, you know, I don't know if there's much logic behind us sticking with Rick Campbell as the head coach, how do you think he would feel about it? Think about it that way.
Well, and the thing that is a red flag to me is saying, well, it's not a competition. If it's not a competition, what is it? What is the opposite of, are you flipping a coin?
Are we
doing rock, paper, scissors? What's the metric? First to hit a three-pointer gets to start this week. Like what is the metric? What is deciding this? Obviously, it has to be a competition. It has to be who's going to be the better player, right? And I think thus far, Nathan Rourke has been up and down. I think that he has struggled to make the adjustment back to the CFL. He was terribly inaccurate for the first portion of that game against the Toronto Argonauts. Chad Kelly, by the way, was also remarkably inaccurate. I was greatly looking forward to that football game. After the first quarter and a half, I just about was falling asleep on the couch. Fortunately, it got a little bit better as the game went on, but I was shocked at how badly the Lions played overall. I thought this team's got four of their last five games at home. They've got Mathieu Betts reigniting the pass rush on defense. Offensively, they've got arguably the two best quarterbacks in the CFL. I thought this team was going to walk to first place in the West Division. That prediction for me thus far has aged like milk. They looked terrible. They looked out of sorts. I think this bye week has come at the perfect time for them to try to get themselves back up to snuff for the last month of the season, because they could still win the West, but let's not forget, they're now behind Winnipeg by half a point, right? It's 7-7. Winnipeg is 7-6. They've also lost that season series to Winnipeg. They can't get that back. So they have to finish with a better record than Winnipeg to host the West Final. And if this team wants to go to the Grey Cup, which obviously they do at home, hosting that game will go a long way. Because beating Winnipeg at home in the friendly confines of BC Place Stadium, that's easy to imagine. Going into a sold-out Princess Auto Stadium when it's minus 10 degrees, big difference.
Yeah, and let's also look at the games that they've got going on ahead of them here, because we talked about this a few weeks ago, and they're coming off the bye against Hamilton and then Calgary. And at that time, we thought those were automatic wins, but with the way the Ticats are playing, and I'm sure we'll discuss that a little bit later in the show, that's not a guarantee anymore. The Ticats are playing very good football, and the Lions simply didn't. And the last time they came off a bye, they stunk out the joint. So they've got some serious things to correct here, namely that quarterback situation, but also on the offensive line, because those seven sacks, it was not as if Ralph Hawley and Jake Ceresna and Flora Merlade were just coming out and physically dominating the guy in front of them. I could almost forgive that. It was a unit that, yes, has been altered by injuries, but has been together in practice all season, simply making miscommunication errors when picking up stunts and blitzes and things of that nature, not getting into the right protection calls, not picking up the right guys. That's unacceptable in week 15. No matter how many backups you have in the lineup, those guys should be gelling together at this stage. They simply were not. Just before we move on, gentlemen, we're criticizing Rick Campbell for mistakes here in this segment. I do want to take a moment and acknowledge a personal mistake. I got a lot of flack on social media from certain people about my headline for my game recap article about the Lions' loss. I think those are valid criticisms. It was an attempt by me to put the Chad Kelly situation at the center of the narrative and play off of what were sort of clever jabs that the Lions were making pregame with their attire. I was trying to be pithy, not funny, but it came across to a lot of people as diminishing the situation, and clearly that was not my intent, but I apologize for not being as sensitive as I should have with my headline on the topic. I pride myself on trying to approach those topics with sensitivity. I think the bulk of my writing would bear that out, but I missed the mark on this occasion and just wanted to apologize to anyone who may have been upset by that headline. For years, CFL pundits banged the table for CTV to broadcast select games, possibly opening them up to a wider television audience. Those people got their wish this year as the Banjo Bowl became the first CFL game shown on CTV since 1986. The only problem was that the ratings dropped 17% year over year as 571,000 people tuned in. A second game has since been shown on CTV, Saturday's matchup between Ottawa and Hamilton, which 275,000 people watched, one of the smallest audiences of the season. Dunk, how do you explain these ratings?
It's really hard to do so without more data, but I'll take a little bit of a stab at it. I think that viewing habits have been created among CFL fans that all the CFL games are going to be on TSN. That's part of it. And also, the other part of it is that I talked to people around our industry and they didn't really seem like CTV would provide a big boost in terms of the viewership. And that's been bared out. It hasn't even been a boost. It's been down. So I think the main factor is just the viewing habits that people for years now, years and years and years, have been going to TSN when the games are on. And it seemed like, based on some comments on social media, you know, especially among Rider Nation, that they were surprised that the game wasn't on TSN because it has been marketed. But when you create those viewing habits, sometimes it can be hard to break. So I think that's largely the case here overall with the drop in these ratings.
Yeah, I reached out to a few sources, and by and large, they were just as confused as we were. I think they were expecting at least even ratings across the board, because if you've got TSN on your cable package, you can just flip over to CTV, right? You're not going to have TSN, but not CTV. You're going to have maybe just CTV or maybe both. It's impossible to have TSN and not CTV. Now, it's possible to have TSN streaming and not have CTV, but the streaming numbers are never included in our ratings reports. So this is an apples to apples comparison of traditional television viewers to traditional television viewers. And I think after the Banjo Bowl, I had somebody suggest to me, well, maybe it's just, you know, another late season Riders collapse as fans there tuning out. I don't know if that's true. We might get a better of idea this week, because the Riders were, of course, on bye last week. So maybe if the Saskatchewan-Calgary rating from this upcoming week is really bad, maybe you can chalk it up to that. But I'm shocked, boys. I thought, as we've discussed on this show, that opening these games up to CTV, and maybe this was a complete oversight or error on my part, that, you know, these games being on network television instead of cable television could result in larger audiences. Maybe that was my own naivete. I do not have a television background. That was just me using what I thought was basic logic. But thus far, very disappointing ratings. I am shocked. And kudos to you, Dunk, for exclusively reporting these ratings. We will see if they improve over the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think what these numbers bear out, or at least show to me, is that basically everybody who was going to watch the CFL was already watching on TSN, right? This idea that, well, there's people who don't have access to TSN because it's not in the basic cable package. That was just false. The people who want to tune in have subscribed to that channel. They are tuning in by way of that. And these drop-offs in numbers are just reflective of what would have been a normal drop-off in numbers on the TSN broadcast based on how juicy or how not juicy these games may have been. The Riders are slumping, therefore Banjo Bowl drops a little bit. The Ticats haven't looked very good this season, therefore they don't draw a huge audience against an Ottawa team that isn't a major draw either. Those things we can explain, and it's clear to me that CTV isn't bringing any new eyeballs. Now, I think it's very easy to say, well, this was a mistake by the CFL to put it on CTV, and they shouldn't have done it. They shouldn't have listened to people. I don't think that's true. I think we should still applaud them for making the effort here, for taking this as a test run to see if it could have improved viewership. I think it's not going to hurt it in the long run. And by doing this, the CFL is able to have some hard and fast data to inform the way they approach broadcasts going forward. We've answered the question, or we are answering the question that everyone has had for the last number of years about what CTV would do to the viewership numbers. Now we just have to adapt our strategies and our opinions going forward.
It is befuddling in another way because, fellas, you look at the ratings through season to date, and there have been some spikes upward, but it's been fairly consistent, I would say, across the board. Then you get this week that just happened, and it's the lowest rated week of the season on English TV. Now, it should be said that the French television ratings have consistently been in the upper 200,000s, if not cresting the 300,000 mark with what RDS is doing with the Montreal Alouettes. But week 15, from an English perspective, had just over 357,000 average viewers. And you look, you know, not just too many weeks ago, and it wasn't just the Labor Day weekend that was big. It was actually the weekend before Labor Day weekend that was big as well, that got almost to 600,000. And then Labor Day weekend, from an English standpoint, I'm talking about for these, was just under 640,000 on average. So a sharp decline. Some people might equate that to the NFL kicking off, and there's only so many viewing hours available for people within their week with other things going on. So until we have more data, it's hard to say exactly, but I would be real curious to talk to someone with TSN or CTV that it's their actual job to try to understand this as to why they think the decline has happened with the games being on CTV specifically.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights. We can't let Marino take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Dave Dickinson was recently asked about the challenges of being a head coach and general manager, as he's now the last remaining dual role person in the league. What did you think of his response, and do you think he'll return in both jobs next season, or will Dave Dickinson, the GM, fire the coach? I don't know if it could go the other way around, though.
I think it's a valid question, and I don't know who asked this question at the availability in Calgary, but whoever it was, great job. This is an outstanding question, and it's one that should be asked to Dave Dickinson at this point of the season. From 2016 to 2022, when Dave Dickinson was just the head coach of this team, they went 73-29 in the regular season, went to three Grey Cups, won one. Since he became the team's GM, they are 10-20-1 in the regular season. They did make the playoffs last year, but that's, I mean, they were 6-12. That's more luck at that point, that there weren't any other West Division teams better to take that third seed in the West Division. In this same interview, he called his team, quote, light in Canadians. I think some of that's due to injury, but when you look at the team's injured list, like, it's not like they're missing Cam Judge out there or Sean McEwen. Like a lot of the Canadians who are hurt are rookies anyway. He also said that his team needs to play with more confidence, which I thought was a bit of a red flag. I don't hear that quote from professional coaches a whole heck of a lot. I hear high school coaches talk about confidence. I hear some university coaches talk about confidence. I don't hear a lot of pro coaches talk about confidence. And since this interview, because this was conducted before the team's Week 15 tie to the Montreal Alouettes, I mean, this team looked so remarkably uninspired, I thought, against the Alouettes. Yes, Montreal's a good football team. We all know that. But the Alouettes lost two fumbles in the first quarter of this game. One was on their first offensive play. The other was a punt a little bit later in the game. Both were recovered deep inside Montreal territory. And when you get that combined with what I thought was a bit of a gift from the officials in that negated blocked punt touchdown that the Alouettes had a little bit later on in the game, this should have been there for the taking. I mean, Dedrick Mills was running the ball well, but the Stampeders, like they have the killer instinct of a Care Bear. It is wild watching this team. Outside of Reggie Bagleton, who is still full
Care
of...
Care Bear countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Is that how it goes?
I don't think that's Care Bears.
I have no idea.
Are you a big Care Bear guy, Dunk?
I was when I was a kid, bro.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's about your era. Yeah, it's a very Gen X kind of thing. It was a little before my time. But anyway, this team plays with... Most of this team plays with low energy. The offense is the most vanilla in the CFL. Defensively, they are giving up busts in coverage left, right, and center after many years of being near the top of the CFL's defensive standings. This team is now in the bottom in a number of categories. James Vaughters had a sack this past game, which is great, but he's been largely invisible this season. They're paying good money to some guys who are not that productive. And it just makes you wonder if Dave Dickinson will be back, period. Do I think he should be back? Yeah, but then you run into what I'll call a bit of an Orlando Steinauer problem, where the job he should really be doing is the job that he will probably no longer be doing. Because Dave Dickinson has no background in personnel, and when you talk to people around the league, they'll tell you they don't really understand what Calgary's doing with their personnel a lot of the time. So I think it wouldn't surprise me if Dave Dickinson, the GM, fired Dave Dickinson, the coach. But at the end of the day, Dave Dickinson is a coach, right? He is not a personnel guy. He is not a GM. So for me, I don't know what's going to happen in Calgary, but regardless, I think the problems that are facing them this year are going to cost them a playoff spot, missing for the first time since 2004.
Are you familiar with the Peer principle, Hodge?
Yes, where you get promoted until you're no longer competent.
Yes, I think that's exactly what is happening here with the Calgary Stampeders. You are a good head coach in Dave Dickinson. I think the numbers bear that out from when he was just a head coach. And so when the opening happens and John Huffnagel decides to move out, you get promoted up to GM, and you're just not good at it, right? They needed a change there in Calgary because John Huffnagel was getting a little long in the tooth. I don't argue against that. But Dave Dickinson has done nothing in his tenure as GM or shown nothing in his career that he's going to be a good personnel man. And you have got a team that is struggling to find talent right now. There was an era of dominance from the Calgary Stampeders where they were a virtual factory. Every single guy who would leave to the NFL or get signed to a big money deal in free agency by another team would almost instantly be replaced by someone who is just as good or better. They do it with quarterbacks. They do it with other positions. It was almost eerie how they were able to replace guys. That is no longer the case. And in fact, if you look around, they're letting guys go that become better elsewhere, right? Like Filarion Armolade has had his best seasons in Toronto. That's a guy that you bend over backwards to keep, an elite pass rusher of that nature when he's just about to peak. The Calgary Stampeders didn't do that. They haven't brought in anything unique in terms of new talent from free agency trying to make their roster better. They have not scouted well enough, in my opinion, or brought in enough pieces to replenish their talent, and instead have relied on retreads, guys who were once with the franchise, who maybe went to the NFL for a few years or went to another team for a few years, and then they've tried to bring them back in the fold, the Mark and Michelles, the James Vaughters of the world. And yeah, they're fine players, but they're older and they're not as effective, and they are not the stars that they once were or that the Stampeders hoped that they would be. This team is just not good enough. And frankly, if it was any other franchise, I would say that there is zero chance of Dave Dickinson being back next year. But the Stampeders seem far too content with the status quo, even now when it should be a 5-alarm fire in that building. If you want to keep him on as head coach, I guess I'd be okay with that. But you've got to find something else in that front office. Someone else has to take the reins as general manager, in my opinion. Otherwise, this situation is not going to get better.
I think there's an easy solution here. It's for Dave Dickinson to continue as the head coach and make Brendan Mahoney the general manager, who has been under John Huffnagel and alongside Dickinson for years, to streamline things. I think that would help in a lot of ways. It would allow Dickinson to do, as Hodge said, what he's best at, that's be a coach. And it would take away some of the awkwardness that can come about when your head coach is also the general manager and the person that you're negotiating contracts with. I will say, based on what I've heard talking to people around the league, there is some uneasy vibes around the Stampeders because Calgary Sports and Entertainment has new leadership there. And Dickinson admitted as much that pro sports is about winning. And when you don't win, it can get uneasy and there's stress levels that go up. Those are direct words that Dickinson used. So I think he's probably feeling that a little bit and understanding that he hasn't been as successful. I shouldn't even say that. Nowhere near as successful as a general manager and head coach as he was when he was just a head coach. And at least, guys, let's give him the credit on this front that he's not being so arrogant like we've seen so many times in the past to think that, well, maybe I shouldn't at least think about changing this up or relinquishing dual roles. Dave Dickinson has proven he was a great quarterback in this league, great head coach, has won Coach of the Year, has led the Stampeders to a Grey Cup win in 2018 as a head coach. He knows how to get it done as a head coach. Being a general manager, that's all new to him. So at least he's being somewhat honest with us in terms of the job being hard and that he knows he hasn't produced as many wins with the dual roles.
Well, and I mean, I've talked to Dave Dickinson a number of times in just social settings. He's a very nice guy. I can see why, even though he wasn't born here, he is very much a Canadian at heart. He has also done a great job of legitimately answering these questions, right? We've seen sometimes guys who should be facing hard questions get, I wouldn't even say a hard question, they just get not a softball and they immediately try to rip a reporter's head off. So good for Dave Dickinson in that regard. And I'll also say this, when it comes to this team, right, I think you're absolutely on point, Dunk. They have done a lot of great things over the last 20 years, and Dave Dickinson has obviously been part of this team for most of that time. This team does not have the resources, right, of some other franchises in the league. We've talked about, right, marketing money, the teams that spend the most, BC, Winnipeg, Montreal, Toronto comes up when you talk to people around the league as a team that spends a lot of marketing money. Hamilton comes up all the time. You never, ever, ever hear Calgary, right? They're probably the cheapest organization or cheapest ownership in the CFL. If they're not the cheapest, they would certainly be one of the two or three cheapest. I will also add this, speaking of cheapness, the CFL operations cap is the only reason why we've seen this trend restart after, you know, lots of guys were their own GMs back in the 90s when the CFL was a very different ecosystem. The CFL operations cap is the only reason why a bunch of guys now in the last few years have had the dual title of head coach and GM. On the one hand, it allows them to get paid more. On the other hand, it removes the possibility of another team trying to poach that person by saying, hey, I know you're the head coach here. We want you to be our head coach, so we'll give you the added title of GM, pay you more money, and then all of the actual GM duties, we'll just, you know, we'll hand those off. We'll delegate them to other people who are doing the work of a GM without actually making a GM wage. So part of the issue that I think plagued the Elks under Chris Jones, aside from Chris Jones, you know, unbelievable lack of attention to detail with the personnel and some of the mismanagement there. But some of the issues at hand are created by the operations cap, which I know we've railed on in this show many, many times, so we're not going to go down that road again. But I just want to have it said. Part of the reason this team is struggling is because of this system that's not working. And part of the reason Calgary's system is set up this way is in direct response to the operations cap.
I think that Dunk alluded to it a little bit, but the GM head coach role doesn't work as well as it once did back in that 90s era that you referred to, because that was still of the time where certain head coaches were, you know, elevated, right? They could yell and scream, and they were almost revered in a sense. They ruled with an iron fist, and that was accepted by players of that era, that your head coach and your, who was also the GM, had complete control and ruled your entire life. That's no longer the case anymore. We've evolved past that as a society, and players have evolved past that. And I think the successful head coaches are guys who, yes, can set discipline and, you know, be authoritarian when they need to be, but are also relating to players and understanding with players and making a more personal connection with them in this era. And that's not conducive to somebody who has to make pure financial decisions for the benefit of the team. All of a sudden, you're going to erode that trust if you're having to make the call on not to give a guy a new contract, or you're having that argument in contract negotiations where actually you're not as valuable to us as you think. I think those conversations become a lot more difficult in this era than they once were, when it was expected that coaches were like that and there wasn't that familiarity that had to be built. It's a tightrope to walk, and it just doesn't work in the current ecosystem.
After a truncated slate in week 15, the CFL is back this week for a 4-game slate that features a number of juicy, juicy matchups. I'm excited for this one, guys. Hamilton looks to claw back into playoff contention against their arch-rival Argonauts. The Riders try to snap their winless streak with a victory over the lowly Stampeders. Montreal and Ottawa battle for first place in the East Division, and the Ford brothers square off for the first time when the Blue Bombers visit the Elks. We'll start with JC. Which of these games are you most looking forward to?
Well, my mouth is watering about all of these, but it's the last one that I'm most intrigued by, both because of the players on the field and because of the potential ramifications. The Elks and the Bombers, the first meeting between the Ford brothers, Trey, will be starting at quarterback for Edmonton, and Tyrell, thus far this season, I think you can make an argument, is the most outstanding Canadian, is the most outstanding defensive player, as you wrote in your article, maybe even the most outstanding player in the league, period. He's been sensational at corner. And both of these teams are in this playoff hunt. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers could really seize control of first place in the West with a victory. But with a loss, Edmonton can come in, get to six wins, and all of a sudden they could potentially be tied with Saskatchewan in terms of the amount of victories. They're right on that cusp of the playoff spot and will make things really interesting in a West division that's completely up for grabs. The storylines here are just way too intriguing to ignore. I'm going to be at the edge of my seat for this one.
The obvious one to me, and I think it's a massive game, and people may or may not really understand that, is the Riders against the Stampeders. If Saskatchewan wants to have a hope of making the playoffs, they have to win this football game. On the other side, same can be said for Calgary. In my opinion, it's a de facto playoff game. We're going to learn a lot about these teams in this one. The Stamps playing at home. The Riders coming off a bye week on this six-game losing streak and seven-game winless skid, I should say, with the tie in Ottawa. So to me, that is the one that could have the most playoff feel around it.
Something, as much as ties suck, right? Nobody likes ties. Something that last week's tie did is really add some juice to some playoff hunts. And here's how I'll illustrate that. The game you just picked, Dunk, Saskatchewan and Calgary, the season series, these two teams haven't played yet. The season series would be irrelevant if Saskatchewan has a tie and Calgary doesn't, because, of course, Calgary has an even number of points and the Riders have an odd number of points. Well, with Calgary getting a tie last week, these two teams played twice in the last five games of the season. This season series all of a sudden matters a whole heck of a lot. Right now, Saskatchewan 5-7-1, Calgary 4-8-1. If the Stampeders win this week, they will leapfrog the Riders in that West Division standings and also get a leg up on the season series, of course, which will be decided later on at Mosaic Stadium in Regina. The game I'm most looking forward to, guys, is Montreal-Ottawa for the same reason. The Montreal Alouettes, by virtue of last week's tie, are now 4 points ahead of the Red Blacks, who have a tie of their own from earlier this season against the Riders in a game that's, you know, totally forgettable back from earlier this season in Ottawa. Nothing interesting happened at all. The Red Blacks and the Alouettes play two more times, which means that the Red Blacks are still, despite last week's loss and despite having a negative point differential on the season, which I still can't really wrap my mind around, hold their own fate in their own hands for first place. If they sweep their last two games with Montreal, they will be first in the East Division. Now, obviously, if they lose their other three or the Alouettes go on a tear, right, the Alouettes can lose both of their games against Ottawa and still finish first. But the Red Blacks still are fully in control of their own destiny right now. If they win the last two against Montreal, all they have to do is be better than Montreal in the other three games. If they do that, the Red Blacks will finish first in the East Division, which is wild. Again, considering where they've been the last four seasons and the fact that they currently have a negative point differential. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying I'm excited to see if it does happen. And the Red Blacks, by the way, 6-0-1 at home. They, of course, are at home at TD Place Stadium for this one against the Alouettes, who have not really, let's be honest, not looked that good the last couple of weeks with, you know, the defense is still solid, but Cody Fajardo is looking a lot like 2023 regular season Cody Fajardo. Much more so than he did for the first half of the season, where he looked like 2023 postseason Cody Fajardo. So I'm looking forward to the battle out East, Montreal and Ottawa. I was just going to say, before we hear from the Ticats fans, yes, we're also looking forward to Hamilton, Toronto. Please don't angrily tweet at us.
Yeah, it's a true testament that to how good this week of games is that the ugly stepchild, is a Battle of Ontario matchup that has twice resulted in shocking upsets this season. And the Ticats are playing really good football. So I expect that game to be very entertaining as well. Don't get us wrong.
Hodge is referencing our post-Labor Day weekend show where we talked about the other rivalry games, I guess we can call them, yeah. But we didn't really focus on the Tiger Cats win over the Argos at the Donut Box, and there was some testy Ticats fans in our mentions.
We did talk about the Ticats last week while you weren't here, Dunk. So, and I will say this, the only reason I don't think the Ticats Argos game makes it is because even if the Ticats win, they're still going to be 4 points back at Toronto. That's a lot of points to make up this late in the season, but it would also give the Ticats, with a win, a sweep of the Toronto Argonauts. And if the Ticats don't make the playoffs, obviously their fans will be disappointed. But if you miss the playoffs and sweep the Argos, I feel like a lot of them are still going to be pretty happy with that. They're like, yeah, you know what? So, but you know, we weren't winning the Grey Cup anyway. As long as we sweep the Argonauts, Steeltown faithful could be pretty happy with that.
Hodge, though, Ticats fans are saying we could still get in the crossover.
No, they can't, but maybe. I don't know. I don't think it's still realistic.
Mathematically possible.
It's still, from a journalistic standpoint, you are wise to point out that it is technically possible for Hamilton to get in via the crossover. To do that, they would have to have a better record than three teams in the West Division. Currently, they are they're 1 point back of Calgary, 2 points back of Edmonton, and 3 points back of Saskatchewan. The reason I say it's not possible is because a lot of these teams play each other. Like Saskatchewan and Calgary play twice. That means 4 points are going to be handed out to one of those two teams. They also play Edmonton once. That means that another 2 points is going to be handed out between Edmonton and Calgary. So when you have the, and by the way, Calgary and Edmonton also play. So there's another 2 points available there. So I don't think, just by virtue of these teams playing each other a bunch of times, it's realistic for the Ticats to cross over. But this is the CFL, man. If there is ever a league where something that weird could happen, it's this league. And if there's ever a season that could be weird enough for it to happen, it would be 2024.
Here's my headline for that article. John Hodge says Ticats won't make playoffs. Hamilton fans upset.
Yeah, write it if you want.
Speaking of great weeks, we just completed another great week in U Sports football. We're going to talk about a couple of the games that stuck out. But first, can you guys believe that Laurier knocked off Western?
Yes, of course, because the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks have a quarterback who I believe deserves a legitimate NFL opportunity. People are going to laugh out there, and that's fine. But I want to go to a game with any scout from the NFL and say, okay, if you changed places, right? If you did that kind of a game where you strip the stats away and you don't have a name on the back of the jersey, let's say, for instance, you swapped places, Taylor Elgersma with Curtis Rourke, would people be able to tell the difference from a physical standpoint? No. From an arm talent standpoint, I would argue definitely not. No. Rourke, rightfully so, is getting a lot of hype at Indiana after dicing up UCLA, and people are even talking about the Hoosiers potentially, seems crazy to say it, but competing for the Big Ten title. And I think Taylor Elgersma is right there with him, just as good. I don't want to say one's better than the other, but a lot of people are talking about Rourke being the first pick in the CFL draft and getting a lot of NFL interest. I think Elgersma is at that level. I believe since my time covering Canadian football, this goes back to when my career ended at the University of Guelph after the 2009 season, that Taylor Elgersma has the best arm talent that I've seen in U Sports football. And I don't want that to be recency bias. JC, I think you would agree that Michael O'Connor's arm talent was elite, but he couldn't put it together to get a legit NFL shot or even to extend his CFL career to be even a solid starter. That didn't happen for him. But I think Taylor Elgersma is a well-spoken kid, and he's going about this in a much different way. just looking at this win over Western, the Mustangs going into that game were the number one ranked team in the country. What did Elgersma do? Dice them up. 24 of 29, 385, two touchdowns through the air, two on the ground. He's underrated as an athlete. And I want to call on the Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine Game, the Hula Bowl, the Tropical Bowl, all of those big U.S. college all-star games to watch this kid's film and tell me that he doesn't deserve an invite to show what he can do in the four-down game. Now, I'm not slighting the Canadian game, the three-down version, in any way. I hope he gets an opportunity in the CFL if it doesn't happen in the NFL. But this kid is legit. If given the opportunity, I think he'll prove that he can be right there with a lot of other quarterbacks that are going to get an NFL look coming out of universities or colleges in Canada or the United States for the 2025 NFL draft and CFL draft.
Yeah, all I'll say on that topic is if Casey Bauman can get an NFL contract, then Taylor Elgersma deserves an NFL look, right? Both massive bodies, tall pocket passers, but Elgersma, I think, is way more talented, has shown more in his college career than Bauman ever did at small schools in the United States. So I'm with you, Dunk. I think he's a special prospect, and I think he is going to be for sure a draftable prospect in the CFL, but hopefully somebody who will get some NFL attention as the process goes along.
I'll add this real quick before we move on from the Elgersma hype segment. Michael Faulds, his head coach there at Wilfrid Laurier University, knows a thing or two about quarterbacking himself. He played at my old high school, John F. Ross, before going to St. Andrews College in Aurora, doing very well there, winning a Metro Bowl or Golden Horseshoe title. And that earned him a scholarship to the University of Toledo, where he was at for one season and backed up Bruce Gradkowski, who went on to have a, I would say, solid NFL career, mostly as a backup, but started for a little bit here and there. So Michael Faulds knows what it takes. He's seen it firsthand from being behind Bruce Gradkowski. And he has said that he believes Taylor Elgersma can compete at any level. Michael Faulds is not one for hyperbole. He's not one for recency bias. He's not even really one to hype up his own players well beyond what they actually are. So to me, those words speak volumes. I really hope people pay attention and that this kid can get even a little bit of an opportunity in the NFL because he deserves it. Does he need to continue producing at a high level? Yes. But this kid has some special talent about him.
I want to give Ian St. Arnaud a shout-out from Queen's University. He's got three return touchdowns in his last two games, which is unbelievable. He had
Was this guy, Jimmy Allen or something?
He had a 117-yard missed
field goal return. You guys don't even know who that is.
No idea. 117-yard missed
field goal
return.
Jimmy Allen once returned three kicks or punts for touchdowns in a 2009 game that, yes, I played in, Hodge, sorry to cut you off, at Queens against Danny Branning. And I think the final was 51-49 for the Golden Gales at the time. You know what the funny part about that is? Kyle Walters was our head coach. What was his first job in the CFL?
He was coaching special teams in Winnipeg.
I'm just messing around, but that name will never stick out, or that name will always stick in my mind. That's why when you brought up the punt and kick returns, I had to shout out Jimmy Allen. Much respect.
I think the Saskatchewan Huskies deserve a shout out for saving their season in double overtime against the Calgary Dinos, winning that one 44-40, an instant classic.
Bro, how about Riker Frank?
Unbelievable performance from him. 223 yards, three touchdowns along the ground for the Huskies as part of their dominant run game. To me, though, the game of the week was the one that I got the good fortune of attending in person, and that was the Manitoba Bisons defeating the Alberta Golden Bears 24-23. I didn't just spend 15 minutes reminiscing about the good old days about when I played at University of Guelph. So yeah, call me a homer. I didn't even
15 minutes on Taylor Elgersma, bro.
I didn't even graduate from the University of Manitoba. I just happened to live close to it.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I don't think that makes me a homer. But regardless, the Manitoba Bisons, they gave up 203 yards along the ground to Matthew Peterson, who was sensational. Hamilton Tiger Cats draft pick, who's having a great season with the Alberta Golden Bears. I loved the call from Chris Morris, former CFL, longtime CFL offensive lineman, now the head coach at the University of Alberta. He was down 24-23 with 52 seconds left. He decided to go for two. Nick Conway, veteran defensive back for the Bisons, knocked it away. We've got the play up at Three Down Nation on my weekly Around U Sports column if you want to watch it. Batted the ball away, and Manitoba was barely able to recover the onside kick and put this one away. So I loved the cojones that Chris Morris showed by going for two, down one in the final minute of the game, and I thought that Nick Conway made a great play. So a highly entertaining game. I also watched this game in the press box while the Ticats Red Blacks game was going on. There was no sound on the television, so I was left wondering, what the heck is going on? Why are the Hamilton Tiger Cats absolutely laying waste to the Red Blacks? I was able to catch most of the game later on with sound, and then I learned why.
Now, there is one game that I want to highlight, and it was pretty far from being the game of the week. Don't get me wrong here. This was not a good football game or an entertaining one to watch as a fan, but I think the result speaks volumes. And we may have some eye rolls here, but we don't talk about the AUS enough for probably obvious reasons in the context of Canadian university football.
Here come the Bishop's Gators.
There's a new powerhouse out there in the Atlantic, right? Bishop's hangs 70 points on Acadia. Unless there's an OUA game.
Technically,
they're
not in Atlantic Canada, though. They're in the
conference. They're not, but they're in the Atlantic University Sports Conference. So, still in the Atlantic. But unless you're playing York in the OUA, all due respect to York, which, unfortunately, they haven't been doing much in recent
they're
years.
They're getting better.
They're improved from last year.
They're much, much better. But that sort of result does not happen in conference. You don't see a team put up 70 points on arrival, a 70-7 victory. That's a statement from a Bishop's team that already knocked off St. Effects. And I have to wonder, is this a team that could maybe push somebody in a national semifinal? I know that's a long ways away, but we've seen St. Effects get a little bit closer in recent years, push the Huskies to the brink in that one game. Can Bishop's do better than that? I mean, they're certainly firing on all cylinders with that running game right now, and they've done a pretty good job through the air as well.
We're going to find out. I believe the AUS hosts the OUA winner this year. But fellas, we cannot leave this segment without shouting out one team, okay? A lot of excitement around there. I love the job that Mark Seri is doing as a head coach at the University of Guelph. And usually I'm super hard on these Griffins, okay, through the draft process and the rest. 3-1, beat McMaster at home, get into the U Sports top 10 rankings at number 10. Well-deserved. And if you get a chance to go look it up, Willem Arsenault had a catch in the end zone that was one that kind of turned the tide there, got them a lot of energy on offense. And we talked about Dave Dickinson earlier in the show, and we should give Dickinson credit for the camps that he runs in the offseason there to help some of these youth improve their skills. Willem Arsenault was one of those players and is now making strides at the university level.
Now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. On this day in 2008, Ron Lancaster passed away after suffering a heart attack at the age of 69. The Little General was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 1982 after a 19-year playing career during which he threw for 50,000 yards and over 330 touchdowns, twice being named the CFL's most outstanding player and winning two Grey Cups. Lancaster was also a successful head coach, twice being named the CFL's Coach of the Year and leading Edmonton and Hamilton to Grey Cup championships. Dunk, you spend a lot of time in Regina these days. What does Lancaster mean to that community?
He means the world, man. He's revered around there for what he did with the Rough Riders. Obviously has that statue out front of the stadium that Mark Mueller posed for pictures with after he was named the offensive coordinator there. He is a legend in Saskatchewan, and he's a legend in Hamilton because he's the last head coach to lead the Ticats to a Grey Cup win in 1999. So legendary in two CFL cities.
it doesn't get much better than Ron Lancaster. He is, I would say, in a rarefied air up there with Russ Jackson in terms of revered CFL figures and CFL quarterbacks, and well-deserved as well.
A couple years ago, I wrote an article for Three Down Nation. You could find it easily by just Googling Three Down Mount Rushmore. But I posed the question, or at least the question was floating around on social media, who is on the CFL's Mount Rushmore? And the four names that I came up with were Wally Buono, Michael Pinball Clemens, Russ Jackson, and Ron Lancaster, in no particular order. I listed them alphabetically by last name in the article, but I think Lancaster, it can't be understated, right? What he was able to accomplish on the field, off the field, his shadow, I think, pours over the league for many people. Even now, he's been gone for this long, and still, you'll find whether it's, you know, Ottawa Redblacks general manager Sean Burke or his grandson Mark Mueller, who's the offensive coordinator in Saskatchewan, you can find no shortage of people who talk at length about what Ryan Lancaster's legacy, what his tutelage, what his mentorship meant to them. All best to his loved ones, gone for 16 years, but certainly not forgotten. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
Canadian quarterback Trey Ford and teammate McLeod Bethel-Thompson co-presented an award at the Canadian Country Music Awards. Man, CFL needs to be out and about more like this, don't they, Hodge?
Yes, and I love that they had both guys present it, avoiding the quarterback controversy. I also thought BC was smart to have Nathan Rourke and Vernon Adams Jr. modeling their uniforms on social media this past week. Curtis Rourke, the number one prospect in the 2025 CFL draft and younger brother of Nathan Rourke, tore UCLA apart to lead Indiana to a 3-0 start. How impressive has his season been?
It's been extremely impressive thus far. If he can continue this level of play going forward, I mean, the sky's the limit for him in terms of NFL draft interest. He's got three matchups coming up. With top 25 teams, Michigan, Ohio State, Nebraska, if he can pull an upset or two and perform well against those premier programs, this kid is going to get some serious, serious attention. Dunk, you reported the San Francisco 49ers have requested game film from the UBC Thunderbirds to scout running back Isaiah Knight. Do you think we'll see the Ottawa native in the NFL?
It's possible. I think based on Theo Benedett, who's now with the Chicago Bears, and Gio Manu being a draft pick with the Detroit Lions, that there's an even better chance. But the fact that the NFL, and specifically in this instance, the 49ers, are taking the time to scout Knight speaks volumes about how they feel the talent level in Canadian university football is continuing to evolve and get better. The Edmonton Elks have brought back pass rusher A.C. Leonard, signing him to their practice roster. Do you think he could make an impact for them down the stretch?
I do. He has to make sure his socks are on correctly, but I do think that he can make an impact for them. He was a great player for them at times over the last few years. The Calgary Stampeders broadcasted their recent tie against the Alouettes in Blackfoot language. Was that an appropriate way to celebrate Indigenous Night?
It's a fantastic initiative. We've seen it now happen with the Elks and the Stampeders. I hope more teams try to broadcast their games in local Indigenous dialects going forward. The Los Angeles Rams elevated Canadian tight end Nikola Kalenic to the active roster this past week for their loss to the Arizona Cardinals. Do you think he could stay there for the rest of the year?
I think there's a possibility. He's really carved out this niche for being known as a blocking tight end. But I think if you give this guy the chance to catch a pass or two, he can flash that special athletic ability. So I hope he gets more burn with the LA Rams. The CFL, fellas, I can't even believe I'm going to say this, has discontinued its use of the term all-star. It's just befuddling to me. Instead, using the moniker All-CFL. It doesn't make any sense, but is there any way we can make sense of this? Or maybe I should ask, should the CFL have trotted this out perhaps behind the scenes amongst the media to see what the feedback would be?
I mean, all CFL, I think, is fine. What I don't get is at the division level, we've now got East Division All CFL and West Division All CFL, which is remarkably stupid. How could you be All CFL if you're just All CFL in one division? It should be you're All CFL, or at the division level, you're All East or All West. And honestly, I think that's what we should put in our copy. I don't think we should say East Division, All CFL, West Division,
that's
All CFL.
That's what we will put in our copy.
I think it'll just be
real.
All East, All West. I don't mind the All CFL.
Why discontinue All-Star? Yeah, All CFL should be your All-Pro team like the NFL, right?
Agreed.
One team.
And that's what the CFL,
CFL
All-Stars are. But now
and
it's all
I'm
CFL.
Okay with that. But All CFL East Division.
That doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense because it's not the entire CFL.
Yeah, we'll just call it All East and All West. I think that makes sense.
It's just a league giving themselves another opportunity to be an easy joke. I don't know if sometimes they understand this, but that's why I said earlier, Hodge, that they should have run this by some of their trusted media partners. You know, Randy Ambrosi gets up there at the State of the League every year at Grey Cup and talks like the media are his friends, which in some cases is true, other cases it's not. But why not at least get their opinion? To me, that would make some sense.
I don't know. Maybe the next time they make a change, you'll get a phone call.
The CFL... I don't want a phone call. I'm just saying, you know, source it out.
Well,
scout
they kind of made
out.
You kind of made it sound like you did want a phone call. So no, you wanted you want them to source it, but not with you.
No, with the group, with the greater media, to get a consensus.
I see what you're saying. Well, fair enough. We do kind of pick the awards for them. So I do think that the media does, in a way, deserve a bit of a say. Not for other things, but yeah, if we're the ones picking the award, theoretically we should have some say as to what they're called. The CFL recently had each team unveil 10 names for their exclusive negotiation lists. Which one stood out most to you?
There's lots of intriguing names here. Lots of quarterbacks, a couple of players with family connections like Frank Gore Jr. or Puka Nacua's brother or Kurt Warner's son. But the one that really stood out to me is a player I got a chance to watch at the College Gridiron Showcase 2 years ago now. Defensive lineman out of Texas State named Levi Bell, who's had some cups of coffee in the USFL, some NFL training camp shots. I've been down there at CGS for 3 years now. The two most dominant players I've had the chance to watch are him and Theo Benedict. I think he would be insanely good in the CFL as an undersized interior pass rusher. I hope he comes up to the Ottawa Redblacks, who have his rights, because he could have a long and very, very successful career in my mind. The University of Regina is awarding honorary degrees to Chris and Ryan Getzlaff. Are they deserving of that recognition?
Okay, I'm not saying they're not, but what is with these honorary degrees? You know? Like, is this just a PR stunt?
Yes, that's what honorary degrees are.
Like, why even bother, man? To me, this degrades actually going to school and earning your way to a degree.
Wait,
okay? It's a PR stunt. Let's call it what it is.
You have a degree, Dunk? Why don't you ever bring up your university years?
I don't really talk about my degree. You know, I joke with some of my buddies that we got a degree in football. I don't want to go into some of the other stories. The Edmonton Elks are starting Canadian quarterback Trey Ford against Winnipeg this week, despite McLeod Bethel Thompson not just being solid, but absolutely lighting it up of late. Is that the right decision?
I honestly am not sure. I like Trey Ford, obviously. Trey Ford plays well. I love his athleticism,
like
but it's really hard to take a guy off the field when he's played as well as McLeod Bethel Thompson did. If I were Jarius Jackson, I'd be tempted to play McLeod until he gave me a reason not to. The Ottawa Redblacks have lost to Darius Pickett for the rest of the season due to ruptured Achilles. Is that a big loss?
Yeah, it's a huge loss. I mean, he's the best strong side linebacker in the CFL, bar none. He'd be an all-star if the season ended today. Or sorry, all CFL if the season ended today. He'll probably be all CFL regardless. And he is undoubtedly the
Redblacks. Wait, will he
Redblacks.
Be all CFL or will he be all CFL East Division?
He's both. All CFL to me all the way. And
I'm just making sure we're clear on that because the language is confusing.
Well, he's also going to be the Red Blacks' most outstanding defensive player nominee, or he should be at this point because he's been sensational. He's not a player who can be easily replaced. They are very much hurt by this loss. The Saskatchewan Roughriders have signed Ryquell Armstead following his release from Ottawa. Is the running back a big addition, Dunk?
It seems like he has a big ego, and that could be a big problem for the Roughriders. There is potential that he's a big addition to this team because I think they're looking for more of a thumper than what Frankie Hixon provides with AJ Ouellette on the 6-game injured list, but he needs to straighten up and fly right. Otherwise, I fear that if he doesn't, there could be more problems caused with him being on the roster than not. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have signed 3 quarterbacks since Chris Drevler went down. Which one are you most excited to watch?
The one I'm most excited for is Brian Scott, because I think at this point of his career, he has the most upside. He doesn't have the most experience. That would be Jake Dolagala, who started 10 career CFL games. But I think if you're looking for an athletic guy who has some upside left, it would be Scott. Corey Mace was disappointed with his team's practice on Tuesday, and so much so that he stopped the session momentarily and brought his team into the locker room. Was that a smart move?
Yeah, I think it's a smart move. If you're not getting what you expect from your players, you got to tune them in and get what you expect. If only you could do that in games, maybe the Saskatchewan Roughriders would have a few more victories under their belt. A disgruntled Riders fan has started a GoFundMe to pay for the max fine levied against defensive lineman Miles Brown for his low hit on Chris Streveler. Think the campaign will reach its goal of $2,700?
It's Rider Nation, and they're upset, so yes. The Grey Cup Festival in Vancouver has secured over 20 musical artists. Perhaps one that might fit all of the genres that we like on this show. JC's is way out there. Which one are you looking forward to the most?
It's a good-looking slate, but I have to pick The Trues. Of all the artists they've hired, that's the one I'm most looking forward to. But there's good music available every day of Grey Cup Festival. The Montreal Alouettes have brought back edge rusher Lawal Ugowak following his stint in the NFL. Is that a big addition for the defending champs?
It's a fantastic addition for the Alouettes to that defensive line that's hurting with the suspension to Sean Lemon. Ugowak was looking like a legitimate player towards the end of his rookie year, made a big impact in the playoffs and in that Grey Cup victory. I think he's got a bright future in the CFL. After I doubted him through the draft process, I think he is a legitimate guy now. Rogers Communication has purchased Bell's stake in MLSC, technically making them the majority owners of the Toronto Argonauts. Is that good or bad news for the Argos?
We're going to find out here. Ed Rogers is a guy that you never really know what he's going to do. And people seem to be split on if this is positive for Toronto sports teams in general or not. So let's just keep a close eye on Mr. Rogers and what his family does. Keon Raymond and Spencer Wilson are signing one-day contracts with the Calgary Stampeders to officially retire with the team. How do you remember both players?
I remember Keon Raymond as a leader and a ball hawk. I mean, you needed a game-saving interception. He was your guy. And Spencer Wilson, I think, is one of the most versatile O-linemen in CFL history. He started at all 5 positions along the O-line over the course of his career. Very few players can say the same. Last one, Ben Fairbrother, a longtime CFL offensive lineman for the Riders and Lions, was killed in a motorcycle accident this past week. How will you remember him?
Well, Fairbrother was the former second overall pick in the 1997 CFL draft. Had a very solid CFL career, if an unspectacular one. But I think the way that he should be remembered is what he was doing before his death, which is he was a coach, the offensive line coach for the Edmonton Wildcats in the Canadian Junior Football League, giving back to young men in his community. He'll be remembered as a coach and as a father and as a husband, as he should be.
One more thing before we go. I just want to get back to this All-Star thing because I had a thought that bothers me sometimes. And we'll use Adarius Pickett as an example. He's easily the best strong side linebacker in the CFL. but he's now only going to have started two-thirds of the season. The Alouettes have had three different guys at strong side linebacker this year. The Argonauts have kind of flip-flopped between Robert Priester and Quincy Mojay, and the Ticats have had three different strong side linebackers. So this illustrates a problem you have, especially in the East where there's only four teams, where sometimes come All-Star time, nobody has really played a position enough that they should get an All-Star nod. So to me, the CFL should have used this as this change as a good excuse to say, we're not having divisional All-Star teams anymore. We're having first team CFL and second team CFL done. All CFL, first team is your top players. Your second team is your second best players. Because there's also times, right, where the two best quarterbacks who dominate everybody are in the same division. And it's like, okay, well, one of them is the West Division All-Star, and we're going to have to pick some random guy for the East Division All-Star, or vice versa. The, you know, the top player in the, you know, the amazing quarterback is the East Division All-Star, then you got to pick some mediocre guy for the West Division All-Star. So to me, if you're going to make this change, get rid of the divisional, just have first team All-CFL, second team All-CFL, done. But they didn't.
Easy, man. That's what I'm telling you.
They should have talked to us. Anyway. We thank you, as always, for listening, watching the Three Down Nation podcast. If you listen to us, please rate us, leave us a positive review. If you don't like the show, first of all, why you listen? Second of all, don't leave us a review. If you're watching us on YouTube, please remember to like this video, leave a positive comment. If you don't have anything nice to say, then make fun of JC's sword sticking in his head. And either way, hit the subscribe button. We'll see you next week.
Be a friend and tell a friend, too.
Enjoy week 16 in the CFL. We'll be back with you next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.